Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of C-Squared Podcast. It's your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Aaliyah, who is here as a special guest of honor at the same time as well as being the co-host. The reason why is because this is a duo podcast where we, our guests, well, we had two guests that we tried to have on tonight and both of them had to cancel because of other engagements that they were going on. So we decided the show must go on and we were going to have Aaliyah drop some knowledge bombs about her recent release of from her band, Shield of Wings. They put out an album called Unfinished. I think it was 3 weeks ago, and my sense of time is completely fucking off, but I think it was 3 weeks ago. And Aaliyah was basically the mastermind for the promotion end of things, at least, from beginning to end. She didn't like totally run the PR campaign, but she was mainly the brains behind it. And I just kind of did what she said, and she kind of was the puppet master and all the rest of that. And she also plotted out a lot of the stuff with the band. So we're going to have her go over some of the steps that she did to help to launch the album successfully, because they were on Knotfest, they were on Decibel, they were in a whole bunch of big publications. And So, Aaliyah, first of all, can you kind of explain your role in the band?
Sure, Curtis. Like you mentioned, I did do like the vast majority of the promo planning and kind of the management aspect behind the scenes of the band. In the band, musically, I do the harsh vocals, I do backing clean vocals, harmonies, I do some folky, waily bits. So like assorted vocal duties behind the leads. And also I'm going to be playing keyboards live. I didn't write any of the keyboard parts. Everything was written by James, but live I'll be playing keyboards.
So in other words, you're like the mastermind of the band.
Right.
Okay, cool. So let's go back like about a year, year and a half, whatever it was. So you guys have been planning out the album. I mean, James has been writing the album for what, 10 years or something like that, or figuring it out?
I mean, not the album itself. He'd been writing songs here and there over the course of 10 years, but he ended up with over 40 pieces of songs and we picked 10 and refined them after that point.
Okay, so when was he actually done everything that he wanted to get done before you guys were like ready to roll with the recording and stuff? Like how, like whenabouts was that in terms of time?
Rolling with the recording? I think we started recording in... It must have been early 2020. And before that, he had kind of met up. We knew who we wanted to have engineer the album, our good friend Matt Motto of Dissona. If you listen to some of his other work, especially like his work with his band Dissona, you'll hear like why we went with him. He has a really great balance of mixing in a lot of instrumentation, making things sound modern, but making things not too modern and sounding organic still as much as possible while keeping a modern edge. And so we already knew we wanted to go with our friend Matt Motto. And so James had met with him a few times prior to that, like talking about the logistics and how much we could do on our own and kind of doing that hybrid approach. Before even the pandemic hit, because we just like to do as much as we can ourselves. And so, yeah, but we really started the recording process. It must have been early 2020 because we did not have Lara join the band until 2020.
Okay, so 2020, you guys started the recording. So the music was already all done. So when you joined the band in 2020 as well, correct?
I was announced in 2020, but technically I was behind the scenes for a lot longer than that. I was involved with the band since 2017.
Okay, cool. I'm just trying to get my timelines all straight in my head here so I don't sound too off here. So 2020, you guys start recording. So then when did you kind of realize you were taking on the role of the promo person, as it were?
Oh gosh, it kind of happened so organically. It's hard to say when it happened. I think it was, let me see. I have a thing I can look up.
Yeah, notes.
Okay. Let me see the date timestamp on when I bought the course that I worked from. So actually I did a LinkedIn learning class on social media promotion for music first. Mm-hmm. But then I signed up for a music promotion course, looks like in I started doing the online music course in also in 2020. So yeah, I did the LinkedIn learning class, which is like just about organic social media growth, and it was old at the time that I did it. So I mean, it was probably, I guess I kind of knew it was going to be me because James hates social media and everybody else hates it. So I knew I was going to be doing it pretty early on, maybe 2018, 2019, like before we got Lara in the band even.
Fair. Okay. So now hopefully I'm not asking a question you don't want me to ask. You did tell me there was nothing off limits, I think. I think you did, unless I
imagine. I don't think so. I'll just tell you if I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. You were already building up your social media presence prior, right? So was that in order to feed Shield of Wings, or was that just to have as Aaliyah only?
Yeah, it was in order to feed to Shield of Wings, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, everything that I did after, I don't even know when I started posting on Instagram consistently, but when I started posting on Instagram consistently, and even when I was doing some of my vocal covers on YouTube, yeah. I was thinking of it as preliminary feeder promo for Shield of Wings.
Okay, because I wanted to ask you about that, because I haven't looked at your YouTube page in a little while, so forgive me if my memory is wrong, but I do have it open right now. I'm trying to look out of the corner of my eyes as we talk.
Okay.
So you were trying to get the image the same as what you wanted it to be for Shield of Wings, pretty much, correct?
As close as possible, but I mean, I think even with like the Camelot one, and with... well, yeah, because in the pan music video that I did, I actually already had my dress for Shield of Wings, and that is the dress that I'm wearing underneath my leather jacket. So, yes.
Mm. Yeah.
It had already been in process at that point.
Okay, so now you got quite a few views on, like, we're going to talk about this for a minute, because I think it ties in with the image, and if it doesn't, I'm sorry, but...
Oh, sure.
Okay, cool. So, so you ended up getting like 1,000 to 4,000 views, it looks like, per video. I think one you had 4.1, Dark Tranquility, it looks like, and all the rest of them were around. Oh no, you had another one for 5,000. Okay, yeah, you were pretty consistent actually. So how did you kind of work it that you were getting those views? Because most people who do vocal covers, they just kind of put it out there and they get like 50 views. And
yeah, I mean, like, I don't really know how that happened. Honestly, sure. I think also they're pretty old videos. So I think I just kind of tried to make sure that the title was official looking. The title was contained the band name and the song name. I tried to write a detailed description. And I just tried to make sure that the video quality and the audio quality was as high as possible. I didn't really run any promo for those vocal covers, and I only really promoted them via my social media.
Interesting because you're not going to know the answer to the next thing, so I'm not even going to bother with that. So now another question. So you were kind of focusing on yourself as being like, well, maybe not like a focal point of the band, but like, I mean, there's two females in the band obviously, and usually with the symphonic, usually the focus is on the woman, rightly or wrongly, it is the way it is. So how were you kind of trying to build up a fan base for you while trying to shoot it over to Shield of Wings at the same time, if that makes sense.
It wasn't at the same time, I would say. You know, I was trying to build up a fan base for me, considering that when Shield of Wings started revving things up on social media, then I could send people that way.
Fair, because I also noticed that in all of your social media tags, you also have the word Shield. So that kind of...
I know, that's an accident, actually. It is, because my tag, my gamer tag or whatever, Shield Maiden 7, my Twitter handle, that was just my Twitter handle when I joined Twitter. And it just came up, like, it just was a happy, happy accident.
Fair enough. Okay, so now I think we've probably talked enough about the YouTube and you at first, unless there's anything else you want to mention on that before we go on.
No, I don't think so.
I got one. Okay, so with social media, we're going to go into social media. So I'm not going to say the person who told me this, but there was another person who was trying to build up their social media, who was a woman who was trying to build it up for a band, who ended up only getting like thirsty dudes and stuff like that on their page. How did you prevent that from happening? Because that doesn't seem to have happened with your page. You look like you actually had people that were going over to Shield of Wings and to your actual vocal covers. How did you prevent that, if you're willing to say?
I mean, you're always going to get some of it, but I've started to get a couple, but I would say I'm very careful about the hashtags that I use. I try not to use hashtags that are going to be attractive to creepers. You know, I don't use like redhead, or I don't use hashtag headbanger girls like too much. Sometimes I'll use like metalhead girl, but I don't really like to use that. So I'm just very cautious about the hashtags that I use and when I use them. And I try to keep it all relevant to the music and as niche down as possible. I don't post really general hashtags as much either.
So what would be an example of some of the correct hashtags to use then?
For me, symphonic metal, heavy metal, or I like using headbangers, or I like using Metalheads Unite. I like to use just stuff that all has metal in it. Like even when I'm promoting our podcast, I put metal music business. I don't put music business general. I use metal music business. Just always try and keep it within the realm of metal or rock.
Fair. Okay, so now let me think here for 1 second here. So where do I want to go with this? So, so where does the character part of it come in? Because you also, because on your social media and Shield of Wings, I mean, it's kind of like, do you agree it's like a character what you guys are doing at Shield of Wings? Like, am I being an asshole by saying it's a character? Because I don't think you're running around with mead and swords and stuff all day and frilly dresses and stuff. But if you are...
I don't think it's characters. I think it's just...
Image?
We're just trying to be authentically ourselves.
Fair.
In like a refined version of ourselves, maybe.
So how do you kind of make it authentic, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, because a lot of people do that and they'll come across as cheesy when they try to have their symphonic image, but you guys don't do that. You guys look authentic, real, and it comes across like you actually enjoy it. So how do you kind of do that?
Well, start by doing something that you actually enjoy. And I am not really sure the exact formula to come across as authentic. I mean, I think you just have to be authentic as much as possible. And you know, it's easy to fall into traps of following trends on social media and what have you. It just has to be, you have to be so self-aware, and it helps to have an honest friend. Like I know for myself, I'm not particularly sensitive to what is cringeworthy. And like, I'm not aware when I'm being cringeworthy. And
you're not aware, or you are aware?
I'm not very aware. I'm not like innately aware of that stuff very well. So it helps that I have somebody in my life to tell me like, no, that's cringe. And this is that, like, or there's a better way to do it. This isn't you. Like, cause sometimes what will happen is you don't realize that you're not being yourself. You don't even realize you're not being yourself. So if you ask somebody that's really close to you to look over what you're doing and tell you whether they feel like this is a reflection of who you really are, that can help.
Fair. Okay, so where was I going with that? So we talked about the image. So let's actually talk about the promo. Well, no, let's talk a little bit more about image, because I mean, let's talk a little bit for a minute about image. So who is kind of like the image director of the band? Is that you?
I kind of attempt to articulate and manifest the vision of James. So James is really the director and the artistic director of the band. And I try and find things that visualize or manifest that vision.
Okay, so how do you kind of do that without, how do I want to phrase this? Because James is a mastermind, obviously, we've already said that.
Yeah.
How do you kind
contrary to what was said at the beginning of this podcast, James is actually a mastermind. Well,
musically, but I mean, like, you're the create, I mean, like, for marketing and stuff, you're the mastermind. So how do you kind of work it out that you are translating his vision correctly without headbutting? I mean, maybe you guys do headbutt, I don't know, like, maybe you do.
I just say like this and send five different dresses and like, is this what you think? And you'll be like, no, not that one, not that one, this one's close. And then we refine it a little further, or like shirts for the guys or whatever, clothes or image. Like we really had made a big effort to find an image that wasn't too contrived and unnatural, but still looked sort of timeless and symphonic metal, you know? You know, the thing is, we're not a fantasy band. We don't write about fantasy. That we don't sing about fantasy topics, really. It's all real. So it needs to look real.
So, okay. So now where do I want to go next? So let's get off this topic for a little bit, because otherwise we're going to probably be talking for the next 2 hours. We're already half an hour in.
Oh, excellent.
So, okay. So
hopefully it's helpful and not just me rambling on about nonsense.
Well, for anybody who's listening, Aaliyah and James both, rather, the album launch actually went really successfully. You guys sold out of all your CDs, right? Didn't you?
We sold out of the European pressing.
Yeah, it was European. And then they also got tons of major press. Basically, they did a lot of stuff that they probably shouldn't have been able to do, but they did it. And they did a really good job on it. So she's not rambling. So if anybody listening, make sure that you're paying attention to what she's saying. Toot your horn for a second there. So anyways, what was I going to say? So who kind of, the artwork, let's talk about the artwork. How'd you guys kind of decide on the artwork? Because that was ominous as fuck for a symphonic metal band, but it worked.
Well, I mean, let's go back to the root of things. Everything needs to be based on the music, and the music has got to be good. Now people say, oh yeah, that should be something you take for granted. Like, that's an obvious point. Like, okay, yes, it should be an obvious point, but yet, yes, we consistently hear music that is not that good. And it hasn't been refined through that process, you know? And it's tough to do. So first of all, I just want to mention that for a second. Like, please don't think that it's all about your image or it's all about how you package the image. You have to start from great music, and then you can build from there. And that is what I think happened with the artwork as well. So the artist, we had a couple in mind, but I had one in mind that I really wanted to use. And I confirmed with James that I could reach out to Maximos Manolis from Greece. He is an oil painter, and he did where I discovered him was he did the album cover for Heretics by Rotting Christ, which is not a symphonic metal band at all. But his artwork is like very classically inspired. And we got onto this chat about like how our music is trying to almost revive the wonder years of symphonic metal, like kind of going back and like reviving that freshness from when symphonic metal was first a thing. And most of our inspirations come from, you know, film scores or like older symphonic metal. And where am I going with this? Basically, it was like the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood was a group of painters in the early 1900s that were trying to bring back the Renaissance era artwork style. And so I was like, oh, I kind of felt like I related to that. And as what they were doing for artwork is what we're kind of trying to do for symphonic metal, if that makes sense. It's like, not exactly, but so for that reason, I felt like it was really important to have a classically styled artist. And he also, Maximos also paints with, you know, he mixes his own oil paints and everything. And there's something about that that's just, it makes it so gritty and real. So yeah. And then the actual content of the image was just something that came to James, and it kind of pulled a lot of imagery from different songs on the album. And you know, if you listen to the album, you know it's not really a power metal album. There are a couple songs on there that are like uplifting and hopeful and what have you, but it is kind of heavy and dark. And so it worked to have that as the album artwork.
I agree. And it, like I said, it was dark, but it seemed to fit at the same time. And I'm not really sure why it seemed as dark as it did, but it was dark. I don't know, my own opinion. You might not like that, but.
Oh, I don't care. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. It's art.
Yeah, true enough. Okay, so then let's talk about how did you guys kind of pick the singles that came out, because it was it three or four? It was three. Three. Three we did, right?
Yeah, three we did. And you know, we only had time for three. So
yeah.
How we picked them. Well, we kind of did this exercise where we asked all of the band members to pick their top song they would want to play live, their top song that they thought was good for a single, their top song overall of the album. And we kind of had a little meeting about it, and all of us were pretty involved in the process of demoing and crafting the tracks, or crafting the recordings, except for our new bassist, Alex Luke. And he was able to provide a little bit more of an objective perspective, I think. And he was the one that recommended Wetland. Now, none of us had ever thought of Wetland as a single, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong. But when he explained his reasoning for it, you know, it made sense. He said, you know, there's the catchy sing-along part, there's a chorus that repeats and verses that repeats, and, you know, so it makes sense as a single, and never thought of it like that, but, you know, that's the way you should think about singles, I guess. Not to say, you know, obviously we love every song on the album. But originally the first single was supposed to be Crushing Hail. So we tried to pick songs that were like higher energy and that we thought could grip people's attention more quickly, because when it comes to a single, you know, you're trying to win over a new audience basically, and you don't want them to click off before they get to the good bit. So yeah, we kind of kept that in mind when we-
The good bits.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I guess that kind of goes over the how you'd figure out a singles, but okay, so now how did you work out which order you would release them in? Because I gotta admit, it seemed kind of, because you guys did a slower one in the middle, but a lot of bands will do the slower one at the end.
So what I don't know, it worked out that way, because I think it was I think it worked out that way for the video recording. Like, okay. We had a time and a place to film for Mind of Myth, and so that was the next one that we did.
Okay, so it was based because you guys had the concept already. Okay, I understand now. That makes a little bit more sense to me. So there wasn't like anything like planned other than got a location here.
Kinda. And like also what happened, we were going to do Crushing Hail second, but yeah, there was a delay on the video because we had a different plan in mind, and then that ended up falling through, and then we had to make something else work. So we changed up the order of the singles.
Fair enough. Okay, so then, and was kind of the idea that they all had to have a video, and why did you have that idea that they had to have a video?
Yes. Yes. I think it's very important in today's kind of climate to have a video with your songs, because people are so visually captivated, and you can use that video on every platform and it gets you out there. And I think a lot of people, especially in our target market age range, like our age, a lot of us discovered music on YouTube, and that's how we still discover music on YouTube. And it's a lot like, it's kind of silly to just have like a track art when you could have a video. So if you can make a video happen, I think everybody should always make a video.
Fair. Okay. But only if you know what you're doing, obviously, because there's some bands that are,
Sure. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With you guys, it worked because you guys knew what you were doing. And there's been a few bands where it's been like,
That's true. You know, that's the thing. You have to be aware of your skill set, and you have to be able to have real friends around you that are going to be honest with you about your skills. And if you don't know how to do video and you haven't been successful doing it, you need to get somebody who knows what they're doing to do it.
So, and obviously you guys knew what you were doing because they all turned out really good. So let's talk about the second video, which name is blanking me. What's the name of the track? And the one with you and Laura, what's the name of the song?
Mind of Myth.
Mind of Myth. Thank you. Sorry, I'm so freaking tired today. I'm blanking. So for Mind of Myth, you guys kind of did like this interesting combo. It was almost like a lyric video / video. Why did you guys kind of decide to do it that way instead of just having you and Laura in the picture and no lyrics, out of curiosity?
Just to add a little more interest, you know, because it wasn't really a music video. We didn't have band playthrough footage. You know, it was just us walking through the woods, really. So, you know, we almost did just a lyric video, and then we were like, well, what are we going to put behind the lyrics? And so we decided to do that hybrid situation. It just makes it more interesting to have the lyrics on top of.
I agree. So one other thing I wanted to ask about that is kind of like, there was a few different ideas about what the actual concept of that video was. Can you kind of explain it for people that are listening? I've heard different viewpoints on it. I want to hear the actual creator or the visionaries take on it.
I mean, I think I'd rather leave that up to the viewer's interpretation.
Damn it. Not taking the bait, Aaliyah. Not taking the bait. God damn. Okay, moving right along. Anything else about videos that you wanted to say before we move on to our final bits here?
I don't think so. Just make sure that you prioritize it, you know?
Cool.
Prioritize making a video.
Oh, one more question on that is, how much, can you go over how much time it actually took you guys to actually shoot the videos? Like the actual amount of time people need to put into making a good video?
Oh, sure. Cool. I mean, it depends on the complexity of the video, of course, like Wetland required more shooting time because we had two different scenarios, you know, the band playthrough scenes and the storyline scenes. So that was filmed over 2 days, full days, like talking noon to 8 at night, you know, sort of 8-hour days. So that's the filming process, but and the Mind of Myth was a lot lower maintenance, you know, because it was just me and Laura, and so we filmed probably for 1 8-hour day, if that.
You had to spend 8 hours walking around for
not just walking around, because we were trying different settings, you got to get as much footage as possible.
Yeah.
And you get as many like different settings and angles as you can. So we tried a few different spots, some shots with us together, some shots with us separate. And then we also drove to a couple different locations in the city that we were in.
Interesting. 8 hours, and it's like an 8-minute clip or something like that, or 7-minute clip. It's just amusing to me how long it takes to do an actual proper
video. Don't even ask about how long it takes to edit the videos.
So. I know what you've told me about editing the videos, but why don't we talk about that? How long does it take to edit the videos? An 8-minute video approximately. that you've already talked
about? I don't know exactly. Like, it just takes several days, you know, of earnest and hard work. And it depends on how much post-processing you have to do.
Do you want to talk about having an extended deadline on these things, or do you not want to mention that? Because you guys were putting in hours to get them out.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's always a good idea. Our plan and what we hope to accomplish for our next campaign is to have the videos completed before we even start the campaign. And I would really recommend that. If you can push your album release date another 6 months or 3 months and actually have all your videos done beforehand, like done, rendered out, uploaded, unlisted on YouTube, before you even start the campaign, that is obviously the perfect world.
Yep.
Do as much as you can to get them done as early as possible in advance of the release date. You know, for a lot of like the reaction channels, it helps if you have it done at least a month before it's released.
Yep. Yep.
And if you just want to premiere, you probably need at least 2 weeks. But maybe shoot for a month just in any scenario, because otherwise you're going to end up just having to ask for people to post it as news after it's out, which isn't the end of the world. You know, obviously, if you're torn between having, you know, a video clip online that you're not happy with forever, or getting a premiere for it, or having a video that you're happy with and not getting a premiere, definitely get the video to a spot where you're as happy with it as possible.
I agree. But I think that they should try to have it done beforehand anyways, as much as they possibly can.
Like you said. Which I already said.
Yeah, you did. Just pointing it out again for anybody listening. Okay, so, and one other thing I do want to point out, just want to add to what you said about the reaction channels. We actually recently had someone who wanted to release a video a week after they got it to us recently. And they specifically asked for a reaction channel to feature it. And they said no, because they needed at least 2 weeks in order to do it. But if we would have come a week earlier, we would have been able to do it. But the band was, they wanted to release. Why?
I mean, coming from the band's perspective, from a band member's perspective, I understand, like, you have everything scheduled in DistroKid, and then you'd have to change it, and maybe it wouldn't even change because it's already populated on all the platforms. Like, you want to sync it with the video release, so it gets complicated pushing things at that point.
That's true. That is a good point.
But do everything you can to plan it smartly ahead of time.
Which you guys did, except you guys just had a couple of hiccups along the way, which is fine, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, something is always going to go wrong, and you just have to roll with the punches. Don't give up.
Are you willing to give a couple of the things that you felt went wrong and how you handled it? If you're not willing, that's totally cool. Just asking.
I mean, I think a lot of it was just planning too much, trying to squeeze too much in too short of a time. And that was just a learning process for us, you know, becoming aware of what we can accomplish in what spans of time. So be aware of your workflow, how long things take you to do, and or how long your video production company needs to finish a video or whatever you're doing. Just try as much as you can to plan ahead and realize how long things are going to take. Things will go wrong, and things will go wrong as in, like, maybe the shirt you wanted your design printed on is out of stock because of COVID supply chain issues. And so you have to change it to a different shirt, and that might delay your order for another week. Your CDs might get stuck at the post office or get stuck in the mail somewhere because, you know, their staff is down and they've got like a crazy, you know, amount of work on their plates. And so you need to plan that. Your CDs might come a week late or a month late. So, you know, hopefully not a month, maybe a week or two, you know, just try and plan as much as possible in advance.
Yeah, you guys didn't have many I don't think you guys had many hiccups though along the way. You guys went pretty smooth when everything was said and done, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, I mean I was stressed as I'll get out the whole month leading up to the campaign, or the whole two months leading up to the album release, but
that's normal.
But yeah, we made it happen. We found solutions.
And on your first go around of ever doing something like this. So hats off to you. Okay, so we talked about the videos. We've talked a little bit about the promotion. Okay, let's talk about the promotion angle a little bit. We'll talk about the PR. Holy crap, Aaliyah, we've been doing this for 45 minutes.
We better talk about this quick.
I'm sorry. I just realized what time it is. Okay, so we might even have to do part two.
Okay, well, we'll see. Let's see if we can wrap it up.
Okay, so let's see here. So let's talk about the promotion angle of it. So the promo. So you guys basically, I mean, your role at C Squared is you're already doing PR, but you were kind of like the mastermind of the PR campaign. Am I allowed to say what you did, or?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just didn't want to. Okay. Like Aaliyah basically wrote the press releases herself. She went and proofed everything herself. She was kind of like the watchful eye over everything. She knew where to pitch, or where, like, she would ask me to pitch places because I would have some of the contacts she didn't have, or she would just do it herself, one of the two. Sometimes she didn't really want to because she's in the band, and I can understand that. But basically it was like it was a team effort, but Aaliyah was the mastermind. She would say, I want this, can you try doing this, do kind of thing. So how did you kind of figure where you wanted to be placed in the
I mean, I kind of just looked at the sites that featured similar bands to us, and not like Nightwish, because obviously Nightwish is so big that everyone is going to feature them. So, you know, not the big dogs of your genre. Kind of look for whoever is a step ahead of you, or where you hope you're going to be in a couple of years in a similar genre, and see what sites are featuring them. And that can give you an idea of, you know, what sites you should be going for. Like if you love a band and their album is coming out next month, pay attention to what sites are featuring them and add them to a list in Google Sheets or whatever.
Yep.
And keep it in your back pocket for when your PR campaign rolls around.
And one more thing I just want to point out about the PR end of things that you did, and you did it brilliantly, is you went and got yourself known to people prior to the campaign. Like you were helping with PR stuff. Just for anybody who's listening, Aaliyah actually asked to start interning and doing some PR campaigns prior to Shield of Wings. That way she knew what was going on. And she was getting herself all over the place on social media, and people would then know a lot of the times who she was when we were doing the campaign, which made things a lot easier on my end. So do you want to kind of cover anything on that really quickly before we kind of wrap up?
I think that it's really important to be engaged with your community. You know, I think a lot of musicians can get into their heads and be like, well, I don't really belong in this community. You know, maybe they feel alone, which is very easy for us introvert musicians to do. And if you're not naturally an extrovert, it seems totally unnatural to go out and meet people. But what I would just say is be engaged with your community, be engaged with the bands that you like, you know, comment on your favorite band's posts if you really like what they posted, and, you know, meaningful engagement. Like maybe they won't be best friends with you, but, you know, try to bring some meaningful conversation to their lives. And I think people really appreciate just being engaged with authentically, you know.
Cool. Okay, so we're probably
should wrap. How many times can I say authentic in one podcast?
You could probably do it a lot more, I think. You're a pretty authentic person. You say things quite authentically, and you're quite authentic in how you present yourself.
Well, thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. It's quite authentic. What was I going to say? So we should probably wrap up because we're getting really short on time.
Really long. I don't imagine anyone will listen until this point. But if you are, thank you so much. And until next time.
Are you going to just cut off now?
You're like done. A bowl and throw up those horns.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.